Now, it's not just new technology that could help us to store digital data in the future. Already, we compress some data so that it takes up a lot less space. And to find out how this works, we have with us PhD student Christian Steinrücken, who is from the Department of Engineering here at Cambridge University.
So, Christian, what exactly is data compression?
Data compression is really the art of communicating using less bits than it would usually take.
Where bits are the ones and zeros which all digital information is stored in.
That's right, using fewer units of information to communicate the same message.
So how do you reduce the number of bits you're going to use?
So the idea is really that one has to rewrite the message in a different way. And that rewriting can be made to exploit properties of the data that include, for example, long repetitions or statistical properties in such a way that fewer symbols are needed.
So if you have something which goes 101, 101, 1,000 times, you could say instead of writing 101, 1,000 times, you could say, please write me at 101, 1,000 times, which is like one sentence rather than...
That's one way of doing it.
Do we use compression a lot at the moment?
Yes, compression is ubiquitous. Every smartphone has compression algorithms built in. And it's something that ships with every operating system at the moment. And it's really a technique that is vital for certain things to work at all. If you imagine, for example, the idea of a Mars rover on the surface of Mars, and you have limited bandwidth to communicate with that rover, you really are talking about a very expensive mission. You want to have the ability to get as much data back from Mars as you can. The bandwidth limit is not the camera on the rover or the instruments. It's really the satellite link. So the idea would be to compress the data as much as possible so that we can send more data overall.
So I guess there's two ways of compressing. You can either attempt to produce exactly the same output, or you can just try and get the important parts of the data?
Yes, both play a role. So there's a difference between lossy compression and lossless compression. Lossy compression is what's happening in JPEG, for example. The idea is that we throw away part of the data that we don't so much care about. And the other idea is to really preserve precisely the data that there are, but exploiting statistical properties to make them smaller.
So what are you actually looking at in your research?
In my research, I look at structural compression, which is the idea that certain mathematical properties of data can be exploited to make them really small. The idea is, for example, if you have sort of combinatorial objects, for example, multisets or permutations, that sort of thing. The idea is that there are mathematical properties of objects that surround us that can be exploited. For example, most data that we're dealing with are highly structured. That means that the surrounding sequence in a long sequence of text, for example, tells us a lot about the bit that we don't yet know. So when we're communicating a text or a long file, the idea that we've already seen part of the file helps us to encode the next symbol in a better way. So I look at compression algorithms that take advantage of such properties in files in order to make it easier to transmit larger files and make them smaller.
So if you really, really understand what you're sending, you don't actually have to send nearly as much?
Yeah, the idea is that if we already know which data we're going to send, then we don't have to send anything. The problem is making an algorithm that learns very quickly what the data is and gets a good idea of what is going to come and exploiting those properties that we learn. So it's really a form of machine learning.
So it's not just about a machine where you sort of turn in the handle, you put the data in and it comes out in a crunched down way. This is actually about the machine learning the pattern of the data in order to become better as it goes on at producing a more condensed or compressed output.
That's right. The problem is that at the time when the Mars rover is sending a file, the technology that's in it to compress doesn't yet know what the data is going to be. So it has to learn as it goes along what the data is to exploit those properties. At the receiving end, the receiver will learn in exactly the same way, and as data is decoded, will update its internal model in order to be able to follow along.
Does one have to send the code to the other so that I've compressed something and learned how I'm doing it as I go along? Do I need to send you the code I use so that you know how to unpick what I did and regenerate what I started with?
The idea is that we both use the same compression program. And when we start out, both compression programs are in exactly the same state. Now, as I start compressing a file, my compression program starts learning. It starts learning that certain names appear very often in the text. It may learn all sorts of other things. At the time when I decompress the file, the same process repeats for the copy that is decompressing, it will also learn gradually as it decompresses what those names are. So the idea is that the compressor and the decompressor really have to be in sync. They are learning the same thing separately on perhaps different planets.
And is it just on Mars rovers, or are there other applications? I mean, we're going to compress the audio for this program, for example, and that means we'll throw away some of the things, some of the frequencies, some of the sounds that we don't think people are going to be able to hear or will not notice if they're gone. So could you take the similar sort of thing and make even better ways of compressing sound files so that our program isn't going to take up as much space on someone's iPod?
That's right. Whenever we have a better understanding of what properties we care about in the data, we can make a better compressor. And this is partially why there are many different file formats for audio, because every now and then there's a small revolution where an incremental change produces a better version or a better way of storing information. And so for audio, for example, something that happens in the MP3 format and other formats is that some of the frequency bands are thrown away that humans can't easily hear.
And that means that then you're saving space overall. You've thrown the data away, but you're never going to get it back, though. So that's an example of a lossy compression. Are you saying that your thing could be used in a way that will get back that sound we've thrown away?
I think it completely depends. Many sensors record things that we don't care about. But when it comes to things like electronic text, we probably want to preserve the exact text without changing it when we decompress it. So this is a case where we really want lossless compression. Similarly, when we have executable files or computer programs that we may want to compress, or perhaps medical data, all sorts of things where it's really important to keep the precise file that we had to begin with, then we want to use lossless compression.
Brilliant. Thank you, Christian. That's Christian Steinrucken, who's currently completing his PhD in the Department of Engineering here at Cambridge University.